on ourselves, growing, to develop, whether it be midos, whether it be emunah b'tochen, it's a tremendous concept. And I'm very enamored and very impressed with this organization. ACT is it's a great organization. I think it's needed throughout the country. So ashrechem v'tov lechem. For all the organizers and everyone involved and everyone who benefits from it, I think it's a great organization, and you should go mechayel lechayel and have a tremendous amount of continued success. Okay, that's the introduction. Did I do a good enough job? And sponsorships and money should be directed to... Good. Okay, this evening's topic is, what I'd like to speak about this evening is what I call emuna and bitachon. Now, we're all familiar with those concepts, emuna, belief, understanding, bitachon, trust, but while we're all familiar with them, I think actually getting a very clear definition of what they are, the parameters, how far they go, and even so much as what's my part, what's Hashem's part, I believe is not always clear. And what I'd like to do this evening is begin with this Gemara that you have in front of you. If you don't have one, then, well, we'll say hopefully you have it. And you don't have to actually look inside for those of you who are ADD like me, but it's a good source of reference, and you can take this home, and I think it's well worth studying. The Gemara tells us as follows. When Hashem approached Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem gave him the grand mission, the ultimate shlichut, to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, bring them to Har Sinai, then eventually bring them into Eretz Yisrael. Initially, Moshe Rabbeinu was very reluctant. As a matter of fact, as you know, Moshe Rabbeinu refused a number of times. In the end, when Moshe Rabbeinu actually agreed, he approaches Paro, and from that moment on, everything turned south. It turned sour. The plight of the Klal Yisrael became much worse. The workload became much more difficult. And everything that Moshe Rabbeinu touched seemed to turn badly for the Jewish people. And at a certain point in Perek Vav, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to Hashem and says, Lama hari osa la'am hazeh? Why have you made it bad for this people? Lama zeh shalachtani? Why have you sent me? You have your cheshbon, Hashem, you have your reason, but why have you involved me in this plight? Why have you involved me in the worsening of the situation? Now the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that Hashem was not at all pleased with Moshe Rabbeinu for that reaction. And as a matter of fact, the Gemara tells us that when Moshe said that to Hashem, Hashem said the words, Chaval al di avdim velo mishtachin. It's a shame that which used to be but can no longer be found. And then Hashem explained, I appeared to Avram Avinu. There were many, many questions that Avram Avinu could have asked me. I told him Yitzchak was going to be the progenitor, the father of the Klal Yisrael. Then I told him to shecht, to kill that very son. No questions. I promised him a wide, long, great land, and then he had to pay a very high sum when he went to bury his wife. No questions. Yitzchak the same, Yaakov the same. The others didn't question me. You, Moshe, the first bump in the road, and you already asked some questions. Lama hareosu lama zeh. Why have they made it bad? Chaval al di avdim lo mishtakim. They don't make them like they used to. And in fact, the Gemara tells us that was a tefillah. It was a complaint against Moshe Rabbeinu that the Ovos were great, those were Bali Amunah, those were great people. You, Moshe, are not on their level. And that's a simple reading of this Gemara. The problem with this Gemara is that the Rambam tells us that the single greatest human being who ever lived was Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam tells us he was the Av, the Chochmah, the Torah, the Nevuah. There was never a human being who saw Hashem so clearly, who reached such a high level as Moshe Rabbeinu. And yet this Gemara seems to imply to us as if Hashem is saying, oh, the Avos, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, those are great men. You, Moshe, you're not in their league. You don't reach their toenails. Chaval al the Avdin, it's a shame which we used to have. We don't have it anymore. Yet we know the reality seems to be true, that Moshe Rabbeinu far towered over the Avos. He was much greater. And the question is, how do we reconcile the two? How do we reconcile the fact that clearly the Rambam tells us, the Achronim tell us, Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest human being who ever lived, yet this Gemara seems to indicate that in fact the others were greater. And I think answering this question this evening will help us get a better grip on these concepts, Emuna and Bitochon, and we'll see how they play out. So let me begin with a very basic definition. If you would like a definition of Emuna, I think the best source of this would be the Rambam's, the Animamims, which really are condensed from the Rambam's Shimon Prokim. And the first of the Animamim says as follows, Animamim b'mun shalema, I believe with a total complete belief, Shaboris Brach Shemod Hashem Hu Bori Umanig L'Chol HaBruim. Hashem is the creator and orchestrator of all creations. Hu Levado, He alone Asa Va'Oseh V'Yaseh, He alone did, does, and will do L'Chol HaMasim, all activities, all actions. In plain language, no happenstance, no coincidences, no activity on the planet that doesn't have Hashem's direct involvement in it. Everything under the sun, Hashem is involved in, Hashem is orchestrating, controlling, Hashem is the Borei Umanhi, creator and orchestrator of mankind's existence. That's what we call Emunah. That, however, is not Bitachon. The Chosavov explains to us what Bitachon is, and he says as follows. Bitachon is Menuchas Nefesh Aboteach. Bitachon means trusting, relying, almost taking my heavy burden and placing it on Hashem. You could be aware that Hashem runs the world, but trusting Hashem means relying, trusting, taking my heavy burden and saying, Hashem, I can't do it. I rely on you, I take my burden, I place it on you, and I trust in your decisions. Emunah is knowing that Hashem runs the world. Bitachon is trusting Hashem, and the two are very different. And I'd like to show you two examples where Emunah and Bitachon are different so we get a better understanding of this. There was one classic example of a person who had Emunah and no Bitachon, and that is Paro. If you remember, Paro told his astrologers, told his wise men, drown the Jewish babies. The Medrash tells us, why did he particularly choose water drowning? Because he made a very important calculation. He said, I know that Hashem runs the world mida keneged mida, measure for measure. I know that Hashem promised the generation of Noah that He would never bring a mabul, a flood again. If I drown the Jewish babies, Hashem is going to need to pay me back with the measure of drowning. Hashem can't do that because He promised He won't bring another mabul. Therefore, drown them, that's the method of choice. Now my friends, here's the observation. Paro had a very clear understanding that Hashem exists, is present, and Paro had a real recognition that Hashem is involved in the runnings of the world. He even had a clear understanding of some of the systems via which Hashem runs the world, mida keneged mida. He had a lot of emunah, but he had zero bitachon. He didn't trust in Hashem. Quite the opposite, he was rebelling against Hashem. Emunah means being aware that Hashem is involved, seeing Hashem's hand in the world. Bitachon means learning to trust in Hashem, to rely on Hashem, and the two are different. We had a fellow in yeshiva, a young fellow, who I used to have to deprogram once a week. At least once a week he would come to me with the following claim, Hashem is out to get me. Hashem is out to get me. And he would show me the convoluted ways that Hashem was thwarting his growth, planning his ultimate destruction. I met this guy, and this guy said that, and I see, Hashem's out to get me. Now that's a fellow who clearly saw Hashem involved in his life. He had a lot of emunah, but zero bitachon. Because bitachon means relying on Hashem, and trusting in Hashem, knowing that Hashem knows better than I what's good for me, and putting my trust in the Creator of the heavens and the earth. And I believe that that's exactly the answer to Moshe Rabbeinu and the Avos. There was never a human being who saw Hashem as clearly as did Moshe Rabbeinu. As I see this piece of wood is solid and here, Moshe Rabbeinu saw Hashem Kaviyachol right there present in every moment of his existence. But you see, Bitachon is something a little bit different. Bitachon is unwavering trust. When it looks bleak, when it looks bad, trusting that Hashem has a broader picture, trusting that even if my intellect can't quite understand the why, the how it's good for me, I rely on Hashem, blindly trusting that Hashem has an answer to this question. As great as Moshe Rabbeinu was, on some level, the others were greater in this issue called unwavering trust. Moshe Rabbeinu saw Hashem clearly, and the others had this absolute, complete bitachon. Hashem, you told me Yitzhak will be the father of the Klal Yisrael. You tell me that with my hands I should check Yitzhak without question, without thought. I go ahead, I rely totally, completely on you. In that sense, the Avos had reached a higher level of bitachon. Although Moshe Rabbeinu was clearly greater than the Avos all around, in this one issue, this one area called bitachon, apparently the Avos were on a greater level, And Hashem was saying, Chaval al di'avdin lo mishtachim, it's a shame that which used to be and isn't anymore. Moshe, you're great, but in some area, in this respect, you're not as great as the others. And I think this concept of the difference between emunah and bitachon plays very deeply in our growth and in our integrating these concepts into our daily life. And I'd like to spend a little time on sort of broadening each category. First, we'll get a little chance to understand better the concept of emunah, and then we'll try to get a better grip on bitachon. I say that there are four levels to emunah. And as we walk through these four levels, you'll see that each one is progressive. The first level of emunah is something that we're all very good at, we're all very comfortable with. The first level of emunah is knowing that there is a creator to the heavens and the earth. That when you hear thunder, it's not by happenstance, it's not by accident. When you study the vastness, the intricacies of this world, when you study rain, lightning, thunder, when you study the water cycle, when you study the awesomeness of creation, you see a creator. I've often said that biology should be renamed Emunah 101, physics Emunah 102, chemistry Emunah 103, because when you see the systems, when you see the complex wisdom, you say the words, if this is the creation, what does it tell me about the creator? And you see the Yad Hashem. That's the first level of Emunah, seeing a creator. That's something that we're all very good at and something that we're all comfortable with. And while it requires thinking about and it's worthy to work on, keeping in mind the fact that Shabbos, the real focal point of Shabbos, is Zeichel L'Maaseh B'Reishis, to see that there's a creator. And to walk out in the woods and say, this is astonishing. The wisdom of the world demonstrates to me the creator. It's something that requires work, but at least on an intellectual level, we're all pretty good at it. That's the first level of emunah. And the second level of emunah is a bit more difficult. Second level of emunah is knowing that Hashem runs the big picture, and that Hashem runs the global issues of the world. In plain simple language, the second level of emunah means knowing that the headlines of the New York Times are written on Rosh Hashanah. But not just the headlines of that particular day. The headlines of every single day of the coming year are weighed, measured, decided, and written on Rosh Hashanah. This is New Jersey, and you shouldn't read the New York Times anyway, but you're probably aware that there are approximately 2 million words in the average edition of the daily New York Times. 16 news bureaus, 425 different correspondents, because there's a lot of stuff going on the planet. 6.5 billion people, there are a lot of things going on. And when you read page after page after page, and you sit back and you say, all of this was written on the previous Rosh Hashanah, which country to war, which one to famine, which new technology should be brought to the marketplace, which new developments, the entire headlines, the details, including the editorials, written, decided, mankind's fate, determined in Rosh Hashanah. And that understanding, while we're also familiar with, requires some thinking about, realizing that in a global sense, Hashem runs the world, Hashem is involved in all of the big deal details, tidal waves, hurricanes, typhoons, and every other event that befalls man. But again, at least academically, intellectually, this is not that difficult. We're comfortable with the Creator being involved. Level three is a bit more difficult to work on. Level three is knowing that Hashem knows my inner thoughts. Knowing that Hashem reads through me like a book, knows my machshava, knows my intentions as I'm thinking them. And that's something that's not so intuitive to the human, not something that comes to us so quickly. And I'd like to share with you a very simple observation that I think will help bring this a little bit closer. If we claim to believe in schar va'onish, if we claim to believe in reward and punishment, then perforce we believe that Hashem knows our intentions. And I'll share with you what I mean. I want you to imagine the following. Imagine you hear about this Rabbi Schaefer from Muncie. What a nice guy. What a great guy. Do you know, I hear every Friday afternoon, he visits this old woman. He shops for her. he cleans her apartment. I even heard he gets on his knees and scrubs the floor. What a tzaddik, what a great guy. And you're very impressed, right? Until you find out that this old woman has an estate worth $10 million and no living heirs. Oh, nice guy scrubbing the floor, huh? Thinking about becoming the next in the will. You see, my intentions don't color the action. My intentions define the action. Is it an altruistic act of chesed, or is it a self-serving activity? Is based 100% on my intentions. And if I claim that I believe in reward and punishment, if I claim that I believe that there's a shofet mishpat, then perforce that means I believe that Hashem knows exactly where I'm coming from, what my intentions are, and knows my thoughts as I'm thinking them. And this is not so simple. And it's rather ironic because we human beings, although we try not to be, we're rather judgmental. And we kind of peg people pretty quickly. We have a pretty good, you know, I'll tell you what this guy's holding, what this woman's holding. Trust me for pegging everyone. And the ironic part of it is we never, ever get it right. I'll share with you an interesting story. There was a small shtibel in Lakewood. Before Rosh Hashanah, they made the following decision. There were many other shuls in close proximity. This was a small shtibel. They decided that they wanted no children there for the davening. If you want to daven with your children, please go up the block, down the block. We'd like to have a very serious, focused davening. We'd like to ask all the members, please don't bring your children. They voted on it, decided it, on it, sent out the email, put up the signs, everything's set to go. Okay. The Gabbai, who was very involved in all of this, who put up the signs himself, is davening in shul on Rosh Hashanah, has his talus over his head, very carefully davening, when all of a sudden, somewhere in the middle of Shacharis, in walks a man with five kids in tow. And the man sits down in the row right in front of the Gabbai, and his five sons pop down one after another. The Gabbai is livid. There was a sign right on the door. We sent out the emails. Everyone knew what kind of chutzpah. The guy brings his kids right here in front of me. It's a little chakras. It's Rosh Hashanah. The Gabbai keeps his tongue, doesn't say a word. After a little while, you know, the kids start getting a little rambunctious. The paper wrappers start flying. The elbows start going back and forth. The Gabbai is turning red and purple. He's trying everything just to not say anything. And he is very glad that he didn't say anything, because when this man stood up for Kaddish Yosson and his five sons joined him in saying Kaddish, the Gabbai understood why the man and his sons didn't see the sign, because they were sitting shiva for their mother who had died just a few days earlier. You see, we human beings are very quick to judge, but we don't have a clue. We don't have a clue with what's going on in someone else's life. We don't know where they're coming from. We don't know what they've been through. This act, we see the temporary snapshot of what they're doing, but we don't know anything in terms of the big picture. But if I believe in schar va'onish, if I claim to believe in reward and punishment, justice, then perforce it means that I believe that Hashem knows exactly where this person's coming from, what this action meant, what his progression was, where he's at. Because if Hashem didn't know that, then there's no concept of justice, there's no concept of mishpat. And this concept is very, very key to understanding my relationship with Hashem. In fact, I have a Muslim exercise I'd like to share with you. If you'd like to grow, the next time you daven Shemoneh Esrei, we have a chance at Maariv, I want you to imagine the following. Before you take those three steps forward, I want you to think back to your high school bio class. Remember, there used to be that Lucite model of the man, the Lucite man, who was kind of a shell, and you could peer into the organ. You could see the heart and the lung and the pancreas, the various organs. Before you daven Shemoneh Esrei, I want you to think as follows. I am the translucent man. Hashem will peer right into me. Hashem knows exactly what I'm thinking. Hashem knows exactly where I'm coming from, exactly where I'm at. As a matter of fact, we say a pasuk at the very end of Shemoneh Esrei, Yiyu l'ratzon imrifi, let my words find favor in your eyes, v'hegyon libi, and the thoughts of my heart. Hashem, let my words find favor, and let the thoughts of my heart find favor, because I don't need to articulate my words for Hashem to hear them. That's for me. That's to be Yotzei Tefillah. But Hashem knows exactly what I'm thinking. As I'm thinking, Hashem peers into the essence of me and reads me like a book. And this is the third level of emunah, the third level of understanding Hashem's involvement in our lives and understanding my relationship with my Creator. First level is understanding Hashem created the world. Second level is understanding that Hashem is involved in the big picture issues. The third level is understanding Hashem reads my thoughts, knows exactly what I'm holding. But the fourth level is where the real action is at. The fourth level of emunah is knowing that Hashem is intimately involved in my life. That Hashem is with me when I open my eyes in the morning, excuse me, when I close my eyes at night. That Hashem is with me during the busyness of my day, as I walk, as I get in my car to drive, as I do all of the things that I do, that Hashem is present. And that concept is life-changing, and that concept requires a lot of work. And I'd like to share with you an interesting mashal that may help us come to grips with this concept. Imagine for a minute that it's a cold February evening, and you're walking on a dark street. You've never been down the street before, and you kind of button your coat a little bit tighter, kind of get the winter cold out of your bones. And as you're walking, you hear a car, you see the car stop, car door opens, three thugs surround you, and one pulls out a gun, and you're staring down the barrel of a gun. Here is a very critical question. If I accept that Hashem decreed on the previous Rosh Hashanah who will live and who will die, what good is that decree when my life is in the hands of this drug-crazed kid? What good is Hashem's decree so many months earlier when clearly this punk has the ability to end my life just like that? And this question is critical to our entire belief system. The answer to this question is really very basic. And that is, if my time is up, if on the previous Rosh Hashanah it was decided, Shafer, you're a good guy, that's it, you've lived enough, and it's over, there is nothing that I can do to change that decree, and I will die on that street corner that night, and it's over. However, if the decree on the previous Rosh Hashanah was that I will live, there are 10,000 ways that Hashem will save me. The gun will misfire. Someone will call in a false alarm, and the entire New York City Police Department or Fire Department shows up on the scene at the time. Some lone cabby ends up there. Many, many different ways that I'll be saved. But if in fact Hashem decreed that I will live, what that means is I understand that Hashem is on the scene 24/7 to carry out that decree. You see, if I accept that Hashem decrees on Rosh Hashanah, mi yifyeh umi yomos, then perforce I accept the fact that Hashem is on the scene 24/7, 365 to carry out that decree. Because if Hashem wasn't there, active in my life, if Hashem wasn't on that street corner, the decree many months earlier would in fact be batal umavutal, it would be nonsense. If I accept that Hashem decrees who will live and who will die, I also accept the fact that Hashem is with me 24/7, 365, making sure that decree is carried out. And that concept is very, very powerful. Because, as you know, it doesn't take much to end a human life. Open the papers. The guy walks into the elevator, there's no shaft, ends up on the bottom. The guy's walking down the middle of Manhattan, a crane falls on his head, ends his life. Stray bullets, drunk drivers. There are thousands of ways to end a person's life. If I accept that Hashem decrees that I'm to live, what I also accept automatically with that is the fact that Hashem is with me all day, every day, making sure that that decree is enforced, and that is a life-changing concept. Because it means Hashem is with me all the time. And if you really want to grow in this concept, I'll share with you one more Musar exercise. Tomorrow morning, when you get up, try this one on me. Before you utter a word, you open your eyes, say the words, "Good morning, Hashem." Just say the words, "Good morning, Hashem." Now, if you're married, your wife may look at you like you're nuts. Why are you talking? I don't know what he's here. But you see, Moda Ani doesn't work. Because Moda Ani is something we said by rote so many times already that it has no meaning. But if you open your eyes and say, "Thank you, Hashem, good morning. Thank you for putting me back into my body. Thank you for giving me another day of existence," What you're doing is you're acknowledging Hashem's presence. You're speaking directly to Hashem. And that is a very powerful technique for allowing me to be aware that Hashem is actually in my life. Again, make sure you're not overheard. If you live in the dorm, you may get guys starting to ask about your sanity. But you see, it's a little humorous. And because our davening is supposed to be conversations with our Creator. And what that means in plain language is, the way the Mesillas Yesharim describes davening, he says davening is not speaking to Hashem billions of light years up in Shemayim, as in, Hashem, can you hear me way up there? It says in Mesillas Yesharim, davening is a conversation between me and my Creator right here. As a matter of fact, he says it's literally like speaking to a friend. When I speak to my friend, I'm speaking directly to my friend. My friend may respond, may not. But says Mr. Sharm, that is a definition of tefillah. Little me having a conversation with the Creator of the heavens and the earth right here. That is a very powerful concept. And that is the category of emunah. These four ideas that Hashem created the entire existence. Number two, that Hashem runs the big picture issues of life. Number three, that Hashem knows my thoughts. And number four, that Hashem is intimately involved in the runnings of my life, all fall into the category of emunah. And interestingly enough, that has nothing necessarily to do with bitachon. You could know all of this, and you could be fully cognizant of all of this, and not necessarily have trust in Hashem. Because as the Chovetz Chabad describes to us, trust in Hashem is a bit different. Trust in Hashem is taking my heavy load and putting it on Hashem's shoulders, saying, I can't do it, I trust in you, I rely on you, and it's different than emunah. I have two interesting litmus tests for your level of bitachon. If you'd like to know your level of bitachon, here's a... The ladies will appreciate this one a little bit more probably than the gentlemen. Anybody here ever hear of something called anxiety? Anybody ever feel anxious, nervous? No? Come on, let's be candid, guys. No? Okay. Now, I want to share with you a concept. If a person had perfect bitachon, there will be no anxiety, no nervousness within that human being. You see, bitachon means trusting that Hashem knows better than I what's good for me. Hashem is involved in the runnings of my life, and therefore I rely and trust in Hashem. Nervousness, anxiety, the tension that arises would not exist. Don't feel badly if you feel nervous or anxious. We're none of us on the level of David HaMelech, Moshe Rabbeinu, or the others. But understanding conceptually that if I had perfect bitachon, I wouldn't feel anxious or nervous is an important part of growth. Because when I feel that anxiety, the first step to do is to ask myself, what am I thinking? Do I run the world? Is there a Borei Olam? Is there a Creator who's involved in my life? Does He know better than I what's happening? And thinking through that thought process and then saying I'm taking my heavy load and putting it onto Hashem's shoulders is a big step forward for eliminating that sense of anxiety, nervousness, and allowing you to grow in bitachon. But there's a second issue that I think bitachon well defines. I'll give you an example to what I think this is. A number of years ago, when we were still in Kolo, I would buy secular books on a regular basis from Amazon.com. As you know, the Shmuz, if you've listened to the Shmuz, there's a lot of secular material quoted. I began as a high school rabbi. I needed material to flesh out the points, and I did a lot of reading. On a regular basis, Amazon would deliver probably twice a week, oftentimes, and I was amazed by the efficiency of this company. On time, every time, exactly as promised. I read about the IPO. I said to my wife, I'd like to purchase $2,000 of the initial public offering. We were cold at the time. Money was certainly tight. But my wife said, sure, okay, go ahead. And I told her the next day, I plan on doing it. That evening, for some strange reason, my wife opens Newsweek magazine. Almost never does she read the back section. She starts reading the business section. Interestingly enough, they have an article about Amazon.com. Do you know that Jeff Bezos has $1 million in personal credit card debt? The company's he's asking $15 a share. There's no way it'll ever be worth that. They start ragging and ragging on and on about the IPO. My wife brings me an article and says, what are you going to do? I said, what do you want me to do? She said, listen, we can't take a chance. So in fact, I did not buy the IPO. Okay. Now, let's say I had taken the $2,000 in, bought those shares of Amazon.com and held them till today. Those shares would now be worth about $1.5 million. Now, Baruch Hashem, we don't lack, but I could think of some clever things to do with $1.5 million. Aw, shucks. Aw, shucks is a lack of betochen. Why? Because if I accept that Hashem decreed the previous Rosh Hashanah exactly how much money I am to make, and what that means is this money was not for my betterment. The fact that my wife should happen to read Newsweek just the night before, the fact that she should happen to read the business section which she never reads, the fact that she didn't read Time which had a very different take on the company, was Hashem's plan. For whatever which reason, that money was not for my good, wasn't part of the plan, and when I say the words, ah, shucks, could've, would've, and should've, that's a lack of betochen. Now let's make no mistake, I'm obligated to be judicious, to be prudent, to be wise, to go out there, study the marketplace, come up with a very solid plan, but once I've done that, once I've done my derech hateva, the way of the world, then I place my trust in Hashem, I say, Hashem, you've decreed, you know what's for my betterment, I rely on you, I trust in you, and all the would-haves, could-haves, and should-haves, oh, if I only bought real estate in the 80s, oh, why didn't I sell my stocks before the everything came tumbling down, what was wrong with me? All of that stuff. Now again, if you were lacking in judgment, if you weren't prudent, if you weren't careful, then there might be a lot to speak about. But assuming that you were wise, judicious, careful in your decision-making process, then you put your heavy burden on Hashem and you say, I've done my part, now I rely on you, there's no anxieties, and there's no aw, shucks, could've, would've, and should've. I rely completely on my Creator. However, for a person to really grow and be tough on, there are two concepts that you have to fully, fully be margish, fully feel. The first concept is pretty easy to feel, the second concept is not so simple. If you want to really grow and be toughened, the first concept that you have to really feel palpably is that Hashem loves me more than I love me. That Hashem is more concerned for my good than I am. That Hashem looks out for my interest with a greater zeal, with a greater energy than I do, because Hashem loves me more than I love me. And that concept requires stepping away from the mortal flesh and blood world that we live in. Understanding that Hashem is the ultimate meitiv, Hashem is the benefactor, the giver, that Hashem wants nothing but the best for every human being in creation. Hashem is the creator and only wants to give as much as he can. And the first concept that a Baal Tochen has to fully, fully get a grip on is that Hashem loves me more than I love me. But that one, I believe, is not so hard to attain. It's a second concept that's a bit more difficult. The second concept is that Hashem knows better than I what's for my good. You see, I have a pretty good understanding of what I need. I have a pretty good understanding of what's for my best interest. And some strange reason, Hashem doesn't always play along with my good understanding. When I was in Rochester as a Rebbe in the yeshiva there, there was a fellow in the 1980s when computer programming was considered a very good career. He was a very talented computer programmer. He was very articulate, very well spoken. He lost his job and he couldn't get another job. Despite the fact that there were many openings in his field, despite the fact that there were constant hirings, for 5 years he couldn't get a job in his field when he was talented, well spoken, interviewed well, and it was a tema. It was a strange phenomenon. And no one understood it. It got so bad that he actually had to leave. He had to pack up his family, move to New York where he actually got a job, and years later, I could explain to you the why. You see, the Rochester Yeshiva is a very fine yeshiva for a particular type of boy. He had 3 sons. His sons really didn't belong in that yeshiva. When he moved to New York and he put his boys into New York yeshivas, they flourished, they grew, they became solid citizens, beautiful people. Had those boys remained in Rochester, they would not have turned out that way. But that was something that he couldn't see. That was something that none of us could have seen at the time. But knowing that Hashem has a broader vision, that Hashem knows better than I what's in my best interest, is the second concept in Bitochen, that I am a human being, flesh and blood. I can see 2 inches in front of my nose, 2 weeks forward, but I can't see 2 years into the future, surely not 20 years into the future, knowing that Hashem has a much broader vision, knowing that Hashem knows better than I what's for my good, is the second concept that a Baal Bitochen has to come to grips with. And you'll excuse me for saying it this way. I believe that 90% of our emuna problems, our suffix, our questions on God, come from one simple fallacy. I believe that 90% of our problems come from what I call playing God. When we play God. As in, I know exactly what I need. I need this job. It's ideal for my family, for my career. I know exactly why it's good for me. And I try to educate Hashem, and for some reason, He just won't play ball. I need this girl. She's perfect for me. It's the perfect shidduch. There's no question. She's ideal. She'll be the right mother, the right mate. It's perfect. And for some reason, I can't get Hashem to understand that. I don't understand. Why don't you get it? Well, you see, the peculiar thing about we humans are that when we play God, we don't even recognize it. But play human, and a lot of these questions dissipate. Playing human means I'm going to use my judgment, my best understanding. I'm going to go out into the marketplace, and I'm going to put my best effort forward, but I'm also going to understand that I really don't know what's good for me. I don't know what's good for me 2 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. I'm going to put out my effort. I'm going to use my best understanding. I'm going to think. I'm going to contemplate. And I'm then going to reach a decision to do X. And at that point, I take my heavy burden and place it on Hashem. And I say, Hashem, You know better than I. And even if it doesn't make sense to me, even if in my world's view it doesn't add up, I trust in You. And not playing God is a huge concept. Becoming a real Baal Bitochen. I think these concepts, the difference between Emuna and Bitochen, are fundamental to everything we do as Jews. What Hashem was saying to Moshe Rabbeinu was, you have an absolute clarity of vision. You see Hashem as no other human being did or will ever see Hashem. But there's a certain aspect that the others had that you didn't, unwavering trust, not questioning. When things look absolutely bleak, when you cannot see, there is no answer. When there's an absolute contradiction and there is no answer, saying the words, Hashem, You know better. Apparently the others reached a higher level. And Hashem said to Moshe, You may be great, but chaval al di'avdil lo mishtachim, You're not the others. In this respect, in this regard, you haven't quite reached their level. And understanding that these are two very different concepts. Emunah means seeing Hashem in the world. Seeing Hashem as the creator. Seeing Hashem as the one who orchestrates everything that happens. And that means when you turn on CNN, or maybe you shouldn't turn on CNN, when you read about it in the papers, which also maybe you shouldn't do, but when you become aware, however you become aware, of what's happening in the world, you say, wow, I can't wait to see the end of the story. I see Hashem orchestrating it. I see Hashem's running it. I just can't wait to see what Hashem's intentions are. What's the end game? Because you see the Yad Hashem, you see the hand of Hashem moving the pawns around on this giant multi-level chessboard, this piece to here, this piece to there, as the entire world follows Hashem's plan. That is a very fundamental part of being a Baal Emunah. And when you understand that Hashem runs the global big picture issues, when you understand the next level, that Hashem reads through me literally like a book, I'm the translucent man. Hashem knows exactly where I'm coming from. Hashem knows my learning experience. Hashem knows my experience in religion. And Hashem knows what this event means to me. And when you come to the fourth level being that Hashem is intimately involved in the runnings of my daily activities. All of those are wonderful exercises in Emunah. But Bitochen is a very different sort of animal. Bitochen is a very different experience. Bitochen is this absolute trusting in Hashem, relying on Hashem, taking my burden and placing in Hashem, saying, Hashem, I don't know. I'm going to use my best effort, but at the end of the day, I don't know, You do know. I take my heavy burden, I put it in Your hands, I rely on You. And that is something that requires life experiences. You ever notice we go through all kinds of different situations? And many a time you may say, Hashem, do I need this? Everything was going well. I was growing. I was learning. I was dominating. I was becoming a mensch. Did I need this? Did I need a sudden market correction? Did I need Lehman Brothers to collapse and everything else that jeopardizes my very world? I was giving tzedakah and I was working very diligently and I was honest in business. Hashem, what's the problem? But you see, it's only when you go through real life experiences, only when the doctor says to you, I have some bad news, that you get a real chance to understand who runs the world. You get a real chance to trust in Hashem when it's not so clear and obvious. It requires very little bitachon when you're making money hands over fist, your health is great, and everything is going phenomenally, and you say, Hashem runs the world, I trust in Hashem. That indicates very little bitachon. It's when you lose your job. It's when your health is jeopardized. It's when you can't get a shidduch for your child despite the fact that you've tried and things are really trying. That's when it requires some real growth. That's when it really requires saying the words, Hashem, you know better than I. I know you love me more than I love me. You're more concerned for my betterment than I am. And I trust in you because you know better than I what I need. And that's how a person grows in bitachon. And without real life experiences, it never happens. I'd like to close with a story. But before I do that, I want to take questions, thoughts, observations, and then I'll close the story. Because sometimes when I close, people become shy. Questions, thoughts. Yes?
You mentioned best efforts, men putting the heavy burden on Hashem. How do you know how much time to devote to your best efforts? Because obviously, you just give yourself a night or a day to give your best effort versus giving a year or 5 years to give your best efforts.
Okay, that's an excellent question. And that question, I don't want to sell this short because that question I think is so good that there's actually a shmuz, number 51, that's called Bitochen and Ishtadlus, Finding the Balance. That actually defines it. I'll give you the cliff notes very quickly. The cliff notes are the Derech HaTeva means pretending Hashem is not involved in the picture. If I'd asked a financial analyst, based on the size of my family, based on my skill set, based on the market conditions, what is the normal ishtadlus that I should do? That defines the ishtadlus. Then I have to go out there and do that, knowing full well that the exact amount of money I have to make, $50,000, $500,000, $5 million, that amount has been set by Hashem. So, you know, again, in very short terms, the ishtadlus is defined by the derech hateva, the ways of nature. If it's an issue of illness, you don't go to a doctor, you don't even go to a good doctor, you go to the best doctor you can find, because that's the normal way of the world, that's a derech hateva. And then you have trust in Hashem, that if my hand is supposed to be repaired, this doctor will do the surgery correctly. If I'm supposed to be maimed for life, I could have gone to the best doctor in the world, he'll make a mistake, it's not going to help. But my job is to almost pretend Hashem's not in the picture, do the derech hateva, then rely on Hashem, that Hashem has decided previously, knows what's my best. But again, Shmuz 51 is a longer version of that. Questions, thoughts, observations? Yeah?
Well, this is maybe a tricky point, but just regarding the original question,
yeah.
Is it not possible to say that at that stage in his life, Moshe Rabbeinu would not?
Excellent question. Somebody's paying attention. Good. Okay. You're right, and I had that question for a long time. It's a very good question. I don't think, see, even before the snare, even at that point, Moshe Rabbeinu was on a level of, he was on a level of Nevuah. For many years already, actually for 60 years already, Hashem was speaking to Moshe. So, in other words, Avram Avinu was b'machzah. Hashem spoke to Avram Avinu in a dream state. The Rambam explains that a Novi is a much higher level of Nevuah than almost everything that Avram had during his lifetime. Almost every experience that Hashem came to Avram was when Avram was in a state of altered consciousness. Moshe Rabbeinu already at this stage of the Sneh was on a higher level of Nevuah, was able to speak to Hashem in a much more alert, conscious mode. So it's apparent that Moshe Rabbeinu was already on a higher level than the Avos. You're right, he became much greater going up to the Mekabel Torah 40 days on Har Sinai, but again, even at this stage, it's mashma that he was greater. So I think, well, good thinking. Questions, thoughts, for or against? Yeah.
No, I just wanted to say something. I was curious, like, how this little place would be tough. I had an uncle who died very young in the pulpit. He was in his 20s, and he had a brain aneurysm, and he just died. And my grandmother, Abel Shalom, my mother told me the story that when he died, my grandmother said, Hashem punished me by taking away my son because I did not wear a shape. And right after that happened, she put a shaykhla on, and all things were a shaykhla. You know, how does this, like, I had a hard time with that when she told me the story. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, is that, you have to be tough, you know, like, right. How does that correlate? I was in light of what you've been talking about. I was...
Okay. One thing I'll say. Someone of the level of Yeshaya, Eliyahu Navi, someone of that range can say this for that. You know, you have to be a Navi. You have to be literally a person, you know, again, of that stature to say Hashem did this for that. But I think that really there's a very different take on this. I hate to sound like I'm self-promoting over here, but there is a shmooze called Only the Good Die Young. And the basis of that shmooze focuses on something the Chassam Sofer says. The Chassam Sofer says that if a person were to make every right decision from the time they come to conscious thought, it wouldn't take that long to perfect themselves. The reason he says why we need 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, 100 years, he says, is because we take one step forward, then two steps back, one step forward, then three steps back, and we do a lot of good, then we do things wrong, and so it takes us a long time. But he says that from the time a person came to conscious thought, they would do every decision right. It would take not that long to perfect themselves. As a matter of fact, he says, when you see tzaddikim who live 70 years, 80 years, long ago they fulfilled their tafkid. They're around because their students need them, their children need them, the generation needs them, but they've already accomplished their mission, because he says it doesn't take that long if you make every right decision. So when people die, again, we would need to be at least a prophet to know the why, and I wouldn't go conjecturing. You know, and again, people have emotions and you know, blame it on themselves, but I doubt that it...
Was it wrong of her to be tough on wife? Was that saying she didn't have to be tough on? So she said that, like she wasn't doing something right, or she didn't do enough, not that...
I mean, again, she should wear a shape. It's a good thing to do, but does no, that but correlate to child dying? I don't know.
She felt that that was why Hashem... You know,
so again, if she was Yeshaya Novi, if she was Eliyahu Novi, then I go, okay, you can call the shot, you know. But if you're not, then it's a pretty bold, how would you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gave the example before, the person, if you're walking down the street in February, and someone comes out of the car and puts a gun to your head, and that if you killed that night, it's because it was decreed. That was going to happen. I learned once, rightly or wrongly, that Kadosh Baruch Hu controls like the larger events, but because of the Bechira Chashiv, that if an individual kills you, that's not the way Hashem runs the world. Hashem will make it up. Hashem, what happens? This is each of the has a Bechira that could happen.
Okay. Now, again, this is a plug for the shmooze.com. That's also, that concept is dealt with extensively in a particular shmooze. There's an Or HaChaim that's often misquoted, but Yosef and the Bar misunderstood Or HaChaim. Let me say this. You'll notice that David HaMelech davened before going to war. He davened, Hashem, please save me. Now, if his fate was in man's hand, why did he daven, oh, Goliath, please don't kill me. Oh, powerful Goliath, you don't. Why did he daven to Hashem? If his salvation or death is in the hands of man, why should he? But more than, why should we ever daven? What good is prayer? What good is bitachon? What the whole thing is a joke. If in fact free will meant, as you're saying here, that when I go on the street, my life is in everyone else's hands, whatever, drunk drivers, stray bullets, lone cancer cells that just somehow capriciously invade my body, then prayer is foolish, bitachon's foolish, and thinking of Hashem as the mani is not true. The whole thing unwinds. And if you look in all of the Rishonim, what they say over and over is it's not true at all. There's Ramban in Chumash who says a powerful line. And Ramban in the end of Bo says that if a person claims to have a chelik in the Torah of Moshe, he has to understand that every event that befalls him is totally beyond Hashem. He says, if a person doesn't understand that everything that happens to him, every interaction with another human being, every sort of strange thing is beyond Hashem, if he doesn't accept that, says Ramban, Ein lo chelek b'toras Moshe, he has no connection to the Emunah system that we believe in. So I can't agree with that. You know, certainly not in principle or in thought. Again, that Or HaChaim, if that's what you're referring to, I dealt with. I forgot what shmooze it is, but it's if you send me an email, I could tell you, send it to you, because I know people have misread that Or HaChaim by Yosef with the Bor. It's a total misreading. He never said it, never meant it, because again, you'd be arguing with Kol HaTorah Kulo, so it's not there. One last question, thought, observation. Yeah.
Why choose, you know, what they do in life. So, you know, my family's like running everything, so like where the child has it all kind of like
okay, so again, this is a plug for Shmuz 51.
Okay.
Shmuz 51, Bitochen and Mishnah, find the balance. But again, I don't want to cop out. Again, the answer is, I'm obligated to do my part. So let's take a very gross example. Let's say I hear from little Bernie, from under the kids I covered, that, Schaefer, you're going to make $1 million this year. I say, whoa, this is great. So I sleep till 12 o'clock, retire from my day job, and just take it easy. I have a little secret to tell you. I'm going to be very poor. Why? Because there's a caveat. The caveat is Hashem says, I'm going to take care of you. Life, health, well-being provided you do your part. Your part is a derech hatev. You have to go out there and get a job. You have to go out there and seek medical attention. You have to go out there and eat right, exercise, do whatever a normal, functioning human being is supposed to do. And if you don't do your part, then Hashem says, I'm not doing my part either. There's a caveat, there's a t'nai in that. So, again, I don't want to sell this short because the concept is complex. And again, Shmuz 51. You hit it three times that. Yeah.
That's a very difficult answer to have because the derech hatev is very different depending on who you are. If you're
right.
A lawyer at a very fancy firm, the derech hatev is putting the 90 hours a week and it's coming on Saturday and Sunday. How does a person, how do you reconcile that with
good question. Again, I might have been better off saying Shmuz 51, listen to it, because again, that's one of the issues that come up, and it is complex. But I'll give you, again, the short version of it. But again, I don't want to sell it short. Shmuz 51, Bitachon Hashtal, let's find a balance. By the way, all the Shmuz are available online. You can download them, podcast them, they're all free. If you don't go on the internet, you could listen to Kol HaLashon. On the back, there's the Kol HaLashon number. But if you do go, you can podcast and download them. And again, this is Shmuz 51. This, by the way, tonight, Shmuz is Shmuz 18. Emunah Bitachon, understanding the difference of Shmuz 18. The follow-up, it took me a long time to get to the follow-up, as you can see, a lot of issues, is Shmuz 51. But let me give you what I consider the long and short of it. There are certain parameters that limit my derech hateva. So for instance, let's say it's the 1920s and we came over to the shores and the only way to earn a living was to work on Saturday, and if you didn't work on Saturday, you would lose your job. So does the derech hateva demand that I work on Saturday? Because listen, Hashem says you've got to act the derech hateva. There are certain limitations to the derech hateva. You're obligated to do as much as you're supposed to in the way of the world unless it violates a Torah principle. Shabbos is a Torah principle. You're not allowed to work on Shabbos, and that's sort of the end of your derech hateva. You have to stop. And it means you have to be prepared to lose your job. I spoke to a gentleman that told me a fantastic fact. He says his grandfather was here in America in the 1920s, and his grandfather lost his job. He was working, you know, in the tailoring industry, and he walked into his boss and said, tomorrow is Sabbath, the Jewish holiday, I can't come in. And his boss said, well, don't come in on Saturday, don't bother coming in on Monday. He lost his job. He got a job the next week. 80 weeks in a row, he lost his job. 80 weeks in a row, in that time, when getting another job was very difficult, and that was a huge, huge test of his bitachon. But again, for 80 weeks, he lost his job every Shabbos. So that's a mitigating factor of your derech hateva when it violates the Torah principle. So too, if working so hard means that you don't see your kids, you're not a father, you're not a husband, you don't learn, you don't daven, that also is a mitigating, you've gone past what's acceptable as derech hateva. There are mitigating factors in derech hateva, one of them being any halacha, another one being if it doesn't allow you to be the type of person that you're supposed to be. So, you know, there are things that mitigate it, but again, Shmuz 51. There's a lot of details to this. Okay, let me close, and I'll gladly take questions after, and etc. I'd like to close with a story that happened to a friend of mine, and I think it's such a watershed event that I think it's just very well encapsulates this concept. My friend Chaim Trapper was learning in Kolo, living in Kew Gardens, and his brother-in-law was living in Forest Hills. Now, his wife and his wife's sister had made up that both of them were going to come to Chaim's house for Shabbos. They made up, both families are going to be there. Thursday night, Chaim's wife gets a call from her sister. You know, my husband came home, he's tired, we decided we're not going to come for Shabbos. Chaim's wife said, I cooked already, you can't not come, back and forth, do come, don't come. Finally, they made up, here's a story. Listen, I cooked already Shabbos anyway. I'll pack it up and we'll all go to your house. So that's in fact what happened. Chaim and his family went to his brother-in-law's house for Shabbos, and that's where he spent Shabbos. Okay. He gets to his brother-in-law's house. Now, Chaim's a big masnid, and especially in his yeshiva days, would rarely learn anything on Shabbos but Gemara. He described that he walked into the apartment, and on the table was a book called Who by Fire. Now, if you haven't read this book, it's well worth reading. It's a story, a very difficult story, about a very frum woman living in Yerushalayim who was in her apartment when the apartment burst into flames. She immediately escaped, and she very quickly realized that her kids were still in the apartment. She ran back, grabbed one kid, ran back, grabbed a second kid. She saved all the children, but when she was done, she suffered burns on 85% of her body. Now, the story is a powerful lesson of Rabbi Tochan, but you also see what it means to suffer. Anyway, Chaim describes that he couldn't put the book down. He was mesmerized. He read it cover to cover during that Shabbos. Shabbos afternoon by Mincha, he walks into the yeshiva, and he describes that when he got to the Beis Medrash, he picks up the siddur to Dan Mincha, and he notices that everyone is looking at him. My suit, my tie. Don't think too much about it, whatever. Dan Shemoneh Esrei, after he finished Shemoneh Esrei, he takes three steps back, looks up, and again he notices like everyone is looking at him. What's the deal? He walks over to a friend of his after Mincha, and he says, what's going on? Why is everybody looking at me? His friend said, oh, you didn't hear? No, what? Oh, well, I'm sorry to tell you this, but last night your house burned down. Friday night, his house, which was a three-family house, apparently in the basement, the heater just exploded. The house was engulfed in flame in almost no time. Unfortunately, another family within the house was very badly damaged. But Chaim, his wife, and his children were untouched. But you see, here's the point. What Chaim understood was that there was a conversation that Thursday night between his wife and his sister-in-law, this house, that house, where should we go? But that wasn't really the pivotal point. What Chaim understood was that there was a tefillah that we say in Rosh Hashanah, mi yichya umi yomus, mi be'esh umi b'mayim. Chaim was being given a very clear sign. That book was on the table. He had to read that book with some sort of mesmerized pull, because Hashem was letting him know, this is what you were saved from. On the previous Rosh Hashanah, there was a gzar din, for whatever reason, that you and your family should be saved, and the details of it are right here for you to understand. And this concept, understanding that Hashem decrees, Hashem knows better than I what's my good, Hashem loves me more than I love me, and Hashem knows the big picture, is the basic concept of bitachon. But ultimately it requires knowing that Hashem sets these decrees long before, and it requires me to learn to trust in Hashem and to rely on Hashem. Again, thank you for inviting me. I think this program is a fantastic program, and I want to give you a tremendous amount of encouragement. Asherechem tov lekem. Again, the shmuzim are all available online. If you'd like to take a brochure or car magnets, I have some car magnets also outside. And I hope you continue this great work. Thank you again. Thank you.